Hey, all you movie buffs out there, I'm David Gaddy.
And I'm Jeremiah Orr.
Together we are
the Theonauts. And you're listening to Finding Christ in Cinema with your hosts, Michael and Brendan.
Right here at GCTNetwork.com, your Great Commission transmission.
On this episode of Finding Christ in Cinema, we eat a banana with a peel and look for Christian themes in K-Packs. What spiritual gifts does Prope bring to the people of Earth? How does Dr. Mark Powell receive his gift of faith? All that and more in 3, 2, 1. Hey, come on in. Admission is free. Grab a bowl of popcorn, extra butter, of course, and find a seat smack dab in the middle. It's time for Finding Christ in Cinema, episode number 127. I'm Michael.
And I'm Brendan.
Join us, and together we'll dig deeper into the silver screen classics of yesteryear, as well as the box office hits of today. We'll take a closer look at the stories they tell and see if we find the face of Jesus looking back. We're going to explore the deeper meanings of these films, their plots and their twists, the characters and their choices, and how we can relate them to the gospel of salvation, and ultimately, our Christian walk. You're tuned into Finding Christ in Cinema on the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
Episode number 127. What did we talk about last week, Brendan?
Oh, last week we talked about To Kill a Mockingbird.
What a great film.
Yes, sir.
And as we're going to hear a little bit later on in the show in our feedback segment, one listener thinks that that was the perfect silver screen classic for us to pick.
Oh, awesome.
How long is it going to be until we pick another silver screen classic?
We'll have to talk about that.
All right.
We'll have to talk about that.
Put our heads together and figure that one out, because that's a lot of fun.
It is.
Going back in the vaults. And I mean, that's a fertile plow to field. No?
Fertile field to plow.
There you go.
There you go.
What are we talking about this week?
Oh, this week, we're talking about the 2001 film adaptation of K-Pax.
Kevin Spacey.
Jeff Bridges.
Starman. You ready to go to the movies?
Who's Starman?
Jeff Bridges.
Oh. I'd like to begin by asking you if you know why you're here.
Of course. You think I'm crazy.
He claims to be not human. A visitor from another planet.
K-Pax.
K-Pax?
That's about 1,000 of your light years away.
Really? Well, let's hope extraterrestrials qualify for Medicaid.
You're really from up there?
He certainly has a way about him.
That's a lovely configuration you're wearing today.
Everyone wants to know about the alien patient.
He most definitely has a sensitivity to white light. He can detect a wavelength of up to 400 angstroms. Ultraviolet.
I didn't think human beings could see ultraviolet light.
We can't.
Your produce alone has been worth the trip.
I would like to go there, to your planet.
I'm afraid I can only take one person back with me when I go.
I'm the one going.
You're beaming back to K-Pax.
On July 27th.
Why July 27th?
I'm going to have a great time explaining that I got psychotics on the fourth floor packing up their sneakers because they all think they're going off to K-Pax.
He's the most convincing delusional I've ever come across.
I will miss you, Dr. Powell.
What are you afraid of? What is this patient doing to you?
He's telling me that on July 27th, something terrible happened to him. I've got to get to him before that date. Time is running out for him.
You know what I've learned about your planet? There's enough life on Earth to fill 50 planets. Be prepared for anything. She says she doesn't hear so well on her left side, so don't sneak up on her anymore.
No way.
What would you say if I were to tell you I believe you're as human as I am?
I would say you're in need of a Thorazine drip, Doctor. I'm K-Pax. When I'm gone, nobody misses me. There would be no reason to. Yet I sense that when I leave here...
What the hell?
I will be missed. Strange feeling. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have a beam of light to catch.
And I've never seen this movie before.
I hadn't either.
Really?
Until it was requested.
By our very own.
Oh, yes.
Oh, here we go. By our very own patron saint. Ron Potatoes.
That's right. That's right.
Here we are in his red oak treehouse.
See, we haven't been here in a while.
No, we haven't, because he's not sending us any feedback.
Well, hey.
We must be doing something right.
Wait.
Or wrong.
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay,
hey, yes. So yes, he recommended K-Pax a long, long time ago. I believe this is one of Ron's favorite films. I don't know why I have never seen this. I mean, we're talking 16 years old.
For you or for me?
No, this movie.
Oh.
This film.
I was about to say, neither.
And this was an emotional roller coaster for me, watching this wonderful film.
Yeah.
That's based on a book.
Yeah.
One of the trivia items in IMDb is that in the book, the protagonist,
aha,
his favorite film was Starman.
Oh.
And Starman is an older film starring Jeff Bridges as an alien.
Huh. That's meta.
That's why it would be too meta to put in this film.
That's way meta.
All right. What were your initial thoughts, your impressions as you're throwing things all over the studio in here? Are you angry?
No.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what happened.
Okay.
Oh, man.
And now I need to give color commentary. Brendan Taylor is leaning down to the ground to pick up the water that he just chucked, nearly missing my head.
Hey, at least it was, it's all safe.
Okay.
It's safe.
Keep it secret.
That's later. More on that later.
Yes.
I love this movie.
Why?
Because it's
what
really
did it do to you?
Well, hold on. Let me get started, Bob.
Okay.
It's very simply executed. A lot of the scenes are just one-on-one with Kevin and Jeff, or Jeff and I forget who plays his wife. But in the story,
his wife's name is Rachel.
Rachel,
yes.
Mark and Rachel, it's very simple in the form, but the content is so complex. Like the subject matter of the dialogue, it's very Prote is able to look objectively at the whole of human race, whereas Jeff Bridges' character, Mark Powell, is stuck in the middle of it and he can't see objectively.
He can't see the forest
for the trees.
Yeah,
exactly. And it's this collision of worldviews. That of ideologies that I find really really attractive.
Yes, so. You know, we were talking a little bit before the microphones went hot about this book that we both read recently called "Misreading Scripture Through Western Eyes."
Yes,
and this really does paint a picture. Now that you brought it up to me, now I can see that there are these two worldviews.
Mm-hmm.
One is very contemporary.
Yeah.
Well, keep that in mind, listeners, as we move on in this episode.
That'll go part of my point. It'll go part of your point, too.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
And now, talk about it on an emotional level.
Oh, man. Learning. The emotion really started kicking in when we saw that. Okay, first of all, got to back up. Do you think that Robert Palmer was pretending to be Prote, or do you think that...
Oh, you want to get into that now?
We have to. We got to clear the
okay,
air.
Okay, so what is the big mystery in this film?
This foundation determines how you see this movie.
Okay.
I see it as Prote inhabited the body of Robert Palmer.
Palmer, yes.
And on July 27th, he exited.
Yes, and I think the big clue in that is when Dr. Mark Powell says, well, why do you look like us then? Why is a soap bubble round? Because that's the best shape that it can be for what it is.
Yeah.
Basically, I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So for me to be here amongst you, the best shape is to be this.
That's a Christian theme right there.
Ah, there are so many.
Why didn't we make that one of our points?
There are so many in this film.
But see, now you and I watching this film, you know, we're Christians and we can see that kind of thing. But how might someone who really is more like a Dr. Mark Powell see this film? Someone who is really...
Well, we live in an age of skepticism, and Dr. Mark Powell perfectly illustrates that in this film.
Oh, yeah.
So yes, that, I mean, it's just, how are you going to see it? Through the eyes of faith and belief, or through the eyes of skepticism?
Mm-hmm. And my question is, and this could be part of the listener challenge. I know we're going all cattywampus with the order here.
Well, next thing you know, we're going to be doing the lightning round.
Now is not the time for the lightning round. That comes later.
Slow down. Let's do this movie.
Bane, I apologize.
Yes. You don't want to make him mad.
But my question is,
Do you think that this gives you power over me?
No. Does Dr. Mark Powell believe Prote?
Yes.
At the end?
Yes.
Oh, well, that's, I mean, I know how I would answer that question.
Yes.
I know how you would answer that question. Yep. Again, that's just, it's interesting to hear what the listeners would say.
He's been given a gift.
He has.
And that's really my point to talk about this. But
we got to get some shout-outs out of the
I
way
know
first.
It. Okay.
So first of all, FCC's very own Jeff Bridges.
Yes!
That's Dr. Mark Powell.
Get my new horse. Okay, bye. Last time that we saw Jeff, he was in animated form, I believe, when we did The Little Prince on Netflix, the Netflix original.
Yes, he was the aviator.
Yes.
The next door neighbor. Crazy guy.
Great characterization. Mm-hmm. Great performance. We had him in The Giver.
Yes.
Have we had him in anything else?
We had him in The Big Lebowski. Oh, wait, we haven't done that yet.
No,
we need to do it. Let's put that on Patreon Satan Presents.
No,
the list!
I can't get on board with that. I just can't.
Oh,
and okay. I don't think the listeners can either.
But the dude abides.
Or the dudester, or the dudorino, if you're not into the whole brevity thing.
That's right.
Jeff Bridges is I love his acting style. It is always easygoing, no matter what he's playing. Even when he is the antagonist in Iron Man, the first Iron Man film.
Yes.
Have we done any Iron Man? Mm-mm, no Iron Man on this show.
We get enough Tony Stark in the Avengers movies.
And a little Tony Stark goes a long way.
It doesn't, it though.
Anyhow, even as a bad guy, he's even keeled and easygoing. That's what, that's really Jeff Bridges' trademark, is his easygoing style. What I love in this film about Jeff Bridges is, again, those character tics and those acknowledging what's going on around the character.
Yeah.
So even in your sound clip, one of your sound clips, as he's wanting to talk to his brother-in-law, but there's other people going around, so he just pauses and looks over his shoulder, waits till that person, and then passes and then resumes. Yeah. That's awesome acting, as far as I'm concerned. There's several areas. I think Jeff Bridges is a master of the craft.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree.
I didn't even have to talk about my emotional reaction because you covered it. This was, this movie's beautiful.
It is. It is.
Okay. What do you want? Anything you need to add about Jeff Bridges?
No, I think you got it.
Okay.
We got to move on to Welcome to the Menagerie, Kevin Spacey.
Again.
He is finally now FCC's very own Kevin Spacey.
Talk about his performance here.
Oh, man. Well, first, how do you portray a character like Prote?
Yeah,
talk about that easygoing. It's like a whole different kind of easygoing, because both of these characters, again, let's take it back to worldviews. Both of these characters are so comfortable in their worldviews that the actors, I would say, almost have no choice but to portray them as anything other than easygoing.
I like how Kevin Spacey was able to portray the. Well, Prote knows that ultimately he's in control of any situation that he's in.
Sure, yeah.
He doesn't have anything to fear,
right?
Anything to worry about.
He's not worried about the guards holding him back.
In fact, he's enjoying his stay at the hospital. He's enjoying those around him. He even tells Dr. Mark Powell, I've enjoyed my time with you.
Yeah. And he enjoys his leisure time when he goes to the Scandinavian.
Yes. When he goes to Peninsula. Labrador and to Greenland and Iceland. Also, did they do something to his eyes? Like when he's under hypnosis, did they put contacts on? What did they do? How was he able to get that look in his eyes? I've never seen anything like it before.
I don't know.
He was under hypnosis.
I would just credit that to Spacey's own acting chops.
Yeah. We need more Kevin Spacey.
We do. We'll see. What's something off the cuff that we could add on the list? I don't know.
What about that Nixon and Elvis and Nixon?
Elvis and Nixon, yeah.
There's an idea.
Maybe.
Listeners, give us some ideas for some Kevin Spacey films.
Because that also has FCC's very own Michael Shannon as Elvis. And and Kevin Spacey plays Richard Nixon.
Yes. Listeners, let us know. We need more of FCC's very own Kevin Spacey.
Kevin Spacey, that's right.
Welcome to the menagerie. What else do you need to say about his acting chops?
Oh, just how could he eat a peel of a banana?
And like the trivia said, he had to do that like 20 times or something.
I can imagine. I could see it being like Gene Wilder having to eat that wax cup in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Yes.
There had to be some screen time dedicated to him chewing on it.
Yes.
And then once the director yelled cut, he got to spit it out.
Mary McCormick as Rachel Powell, she did a fantastic job.
Oh, yeah.
As that wife that is basically estranged from her husband because he is so consumed with his work.
Mm-hmm.
That goes back to that whole worldview thing. He can't see the forest.
Yeah.
This guy cannot see the forest. Will he at the end? And then many of the patients, David Patrick Kelly as Howie, Saul Williams as Ernie. I thought Peter Garetti as Sal did a great job. He can't make eye contact. And, you know, there's just, I mean, they did their homework. And I appreciated Celia Weston as Doris Archer. I thought that was a great character.
Oh, yeah. I kind of wish they had a little bit more. I wish there could have been more with the patients altogether.
Well, I believe that that the effect that Prout had on them was profound, and there was not a person in that hospital that was not touched by his presence. Should we just go ahead and jump into Christian themes?
I can think of no better springboard.
Wow. The character of Pro, you know, he just appears at the beginning. That man in the train station, you know, notices there's a strange beam of light.
Mm-hmm.
And I take it that he's there in that same spot most days at this time.
So much so that the local law enforcement asks him, you know, hey, did you see this guy come in?
Yep.
You know, they knew him by name. They were so comfortable with him being there. They knew he was there.
They needed his help, and you're the guy to help because we know you, and we know we can trust your you know, what you say. No, he just appeared. You know, he notices something strange is going on, and I can only chalk that up to this light that's appearing just, you know, 10 or 15 yards away from him. That's odd. There's something odd.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the crowd comes through as they're switching trains, and as it disperses again just a couple of seconds later, here's Prout standing there. And just a great introduction to Prout. Really enjoyed that. But there are so many people, Brendan, in this film that need saving. Obviously the patients, Ernie, Howie, Bess, Doris, Sal, Dr. Mark Powell. That rhymes. Sal, Dr. Mark Powell.
Oh, my goodness.
Let's talk a little bit about some of these people. Ernie. Ernie is a germaphobe. There's another term for that, but it's all actually part of the family of OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. And this guy, I mean, gloves and you know, surgical mask and everywhere.
He doesn't want to breathe the air.
No!
He doesn't eat meat. He doesn't.
In fact, he's convinced that there are particulates in the air that'll get you. They'll get you. His friend Howie, who also is OCD. And so that both these guys suffer from OCD or a form thereof, and they're best friends. Even though, you know, you get two OCD people together, and they're, you know, the tendency is to butt some heads.
Well, sure. Yeah.
You know, in fact, hey, right at the beginning, a day, maybe mere days after Prout arrives at this hospital and under the care of Dr. Mark Powell, he gets up in the morning and he's everybody's friend.
Morning, Betty.
Good morning, Prout.
Morning, Navarro.
Hey, what's up,
Mr. Friedman? Morning, Maria.
I'm Vanessa.
Just chill. Just chill. Morning, Bess.
She doesn't talk to anybody. Afraid smoke will come out of her mouth when she talks. Been here since she was a little girl. Burned her house down. Shouldn't play with matches. Very dangerous.
It was an electrical fire. Why do you make up stories like that?
Ernie has a very powerful imagination.
This is a great sound clip. We learned so much in this one scene. Mm-hmm. First of all, Prout is involved right at the very beginning with everybody's life.
Yep.
He just jumps right in and he knows everybody. So much so, good morning, Maria. I'm Vanessa. Well, she has split personality. Personality disorder. And I love it when she says, I'm Vanessa, and the way he looks at her. Okay, you know, just okay. Moves on. But then Bess, good morning, Bess. He already knows about Bess. Mm-hmm. Good morning, Bess. And so we get to meet Ernie and Howie. What does Ernie say? She doesn't talk to anybody. Afraid of smoke. Afraid smoke will come out of her mouth when she talks. Been there since she was a little girl. Burned her house down. Shouldn't play with matches. Very dangerous. And here's Howie. It was an electrical fire. Why do you make up stories like that?
Yeah.
I love that interaction. Mm-hmm. You know, Ernie has a very powerful imagination. Well, you know what? So do you, Howie. That's part of what OCD is.
Yes.
But they're friends, and Prout is involved in their lives. And he's going to focus on certain people very specifically, and one of them is Howie. I don't know Howie's backstory. We know that he's a very smart man, a very educated man, mm-hmm. but he has an extreme form of OCD. And in fact, one of the nurses or one of the orderlies, whatever this lady's function is, notices something strange one day about Howie, and he's just sitting and staring out a window, mm-hmm. just staring. And she tells Dr. Powell, what's his response to that?
He runs to go see what's going on.
Because that's strange behavior for Ernie.
He's usually very fidgety, very hyperactive.
Yep.
And
arranging papers and rearranging and, you know, whatever he's doing.
And now, at the moment you're talking about, he's just sitting there staring out a window.
And so Dr. Powell goes up to him, Howie, what's going on?
Are you looking for something?
Bluebird.
The bluebird?
The bluebird of happiness. Prout told me to find the bluebird of happiness.
Prout told you?
It's a task. The first of three. I don't know what the other two are yet. He'll tell me. If I complete all three, I'll be cured.
So now Dr. Mark Powell is noticing something else about this strange patient, this delusional who is the most convincing that he's ever encountered, Prout. He's noticing that he is now involving himself in the lives of everybody around him.
Yeah. Hey.
And, Dr. Mark Powell is a skeptic. He doesn't believe Prout's story that he's from the planet K-Pax. That's a K-PAX. Mm-hmm. In this particular constellation that, as we call it, he can tell him everything about this and how he travels here on a beam of light. And Einstein says traveling at the speed of light is impossible. No, you misread Einstein. And no, we don't travel at the speed of light. Oh, we can travel many times that amount, or else it would take me about 1,000 years to get here. Now, wouldn't it?
Right.
And so Mark keeps asking these questions, as a psychiatrist does, because he's trying to get some clues out of what Prout is saying. And Prout just says, Mark.
Marco.
You are not really listening to what I'm saying to you, are you? You're asking me these questions and I'm telling you things, but you're not even listening to what I'm telling you because your questions indicate that you have no understanding or no real concern with the words that I'm saying. Maybe you're only concerned with how I'm saying it. And then they go, there's a scene in the outer garden court area. And Prout's out there, and here comes Mark Powell. He says, you know what, Prout? This has to stop. you're involving yourself in all these people's lives has to stop. It's one thing to take an interest in your fellow patients. It's quite another to make them think that you can cure them. You told Howie, I'm giving you 3 tasks, and if you complete them, you will be healed. And he believed you.
Mm-hmm.
He believed you. It's not your job to cure Howie or Ernie or Maria or anyone else. It's mine. Prout says, then why haven't you cured them yet? Heal thyself, physician.
Hey.
This is a powerful, powerful film.
Yeah.
Well, what about that bluebird? The bluebird of happiness that he tells Howie, this is your first task, find the bluebird of happiness. And he finds him. And the place just erupts.
Goes wild.
And the joy on everybody's face there. It even got Mrs. Archer to come out of her room. She doesn't come out of your room. And here comes Maria that night.
I know who you are. You're the bluebird.
Good night, Bess.
I know who you are, Prout. I know who you are. In Jesus' life, there were many people that knew who he was.
Yeah.
There were many more people that didn't,
mm-hmm.
such as Dr. Mark Powell's, Pharisees and Sadducees and religious leaders and people in authority and people that look down on other people and say, well, do you see all these degrees I have on the wall?
Right.
No, of course I'm not listening to you
because
you're crazy. One example, and this is a negative example. Here it comes in Luke chapter 4, verses 31 through 37, out of the New English Translation, the NET. So he, Jesus, went to Capernaum, a town in Galilee, and on the Sabbath he began to teach the people. They were amazed at his teaching because he spoke with authority. Now in the synagogue, there was a man who had the spirit of an unclean demon, and he cried out with a loud voice, ha, leave us alone, Jesus the Nazarene. Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God. I know who you are. Jesus tells him, shut your mouth and get out of him. Right? And then the people are, you know, the leaders, and what's going on here? For with authority and power, he commands the unclean spirits, and they come out. And so the news of him spread into all the region. What's the news of Prout? What's happening?
That he's got a cure.
All it's going throughout all the region. This is a special man, and Bess knows who he is. Okay, when we come back on the other side of the break, Brendan, I'm going to finish up my this point, and it's going to end up with gifts given to 3 patients. 3 patients. So stay tuned, friends, on the other side, right here on Finding Christ in Cinema. And another reminder for our podcast listeners, if you didn't listen to last episode, we took that hard break because Finding Christ in Cinema is now airing on our local radio station here in Manchester, Tennessee, WMSR Thunder Radio. So we have these hard break times, Brendan. Are you cool with that?
Oh, yeah, I'm cool.
All right.
I'm cool,
well, then we'll pick up where we left off.
All right.
And welcome back to Finding Christ in Cinema. We are talking about the 2001 film K-Pax.
Yes.
Starring Kevin Spacey and Jeff Bridges. And the Christian themes in this film are...
aplenty.
Yeah. Legion.
Bountiful. Yeah. It's a horde.
We have already set up that Prout is investing himself into the lives of all these people that are associated with this mental facility, this hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And he's making promises to them.
Hospital? Hospitable.
Huh.
Curious.
Hospital?
Huh.
Curious. Yes. Yeah. He's making promises, especially to Howie. We know of this promise that he said, I'm going to give you 3 tasks. If you complete these 3 tasks, you're going to be cured. And the first one is to spot the bluebird of happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And he spots the bluebird one day, and the hospital goes nuts and crazy. And again, the look, you have to focus on the faces of all these patients. And even the orderlies and the nurses and the doctors, there's joy. Wow. Hey, I mean, even Mark Powell.
Even when Dr. Mark Powell comes up, you can just...
It's a blue jay.
You can tell on his face there's that astonishment.
Yes.
And he doesn't know what to make of
what's
happening.
There's something interesting and special about this happening. And then later on that night, the girl who doesn't talk, who has never spoken, Bess, comes into and pokes her head into Prout's bedroom late at night. I know who you are. You're the bluebird. Wow. He's able to give Howie the confidence and the wherewithal, I guess, to cure his friend Ernie. Mm-hmm. There's a big kerfuffle. Ernie's in the hospital wing. Yeah. And Dr. Mark Powell and everybody's running in there. What happened? What happened? He's sitting up with a look of joy on his face and says, well, Ernie came in and choked me while I was sleeping.
And I
had an epiphany. I had a realization that I've spent my life in fear of something that I have no control over. Death. Can't control that. And so what's the point of living the way that I've been living? I feel great. I feel great. What does he say?
I'm going to go eat fish off the bone now.
Yes. I'll swallow the biggest pill you have. Yeah. All these things that he's afraid of and has spent his life in fear of. Hey, I'm cured. Thanks to Howie. Thanks to Prout. And they go into Howie. What happened? What did you do? I cured him, didn't I? Prout says, I have one more task. Then it's bon voyage. His second task was to cure his friend Ernie.
Mm-hmm.
How crazy is this in the mind of Mark? Because Mark discovers a rational explanation for Prout's delusion. He goes, he follows this trail all the way to New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
From the East Coast, somewhere, or Manhattan, right? It's the Manhattan.
I think so.
That's where this hospital is. To New Mexico, and discovers this story about Robert Porter. And we can't get into that. We don't have the time to dissect that right now. So listeners, we leave it up to you to watch that whole thread of the film. And then when he comes back, and it's the day before Prout is set to take off, Dr. Mark Powell has him in his office and, you know, here's a celebratory drink to send you off and all this stuff. And then he says, wait, I have one more thing I want to show you. And it's this yearbook that shows Prout's face in high school. And he says, this is you.
That is Robert Porter.
Prout, that's you. You and Robert Porter are the same person.
That's patently absurd. I'm not even human.
Can't you at least admit the possibility?
I will admit the possibility that I am Robert Porter. If you will admit the possibility that I am from K-Pax. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have a beam of light to catch. Oh, Mark. Now that you've found Robert, please take good care of him.
That is the gift that he leaves Mark Powell. You see my face? This isn't my face.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have care over Robert Porter when I leave in the morning. Take good care of him.
Mm-hmm.
Take good care of him. What a gift. We can explore that. How is that a gift for him? But we see at the end of the film, and he's pushing Robert Porter, a catatonic Robert Porter, in a wheelchair and just talking with them. But you can hear the doubt in his voice. You know, perhaps you aren't Prout. We see it. Did you watch the film to the end of the credits?
No.
Oh! Little spoiler alert.
To the end of the credits?
The very end of the credits.
Oh, man.
Yes. Where Mark Powell is out in his backyard late at night with a telescope and looking up and looking and gazing and searching. That's the gift that he gave him, because he was a doubter. He was a doubter. And he was given the gift. First, you're going to care for somebody else. And you're going to seek
and you will find. You're a seeker now. You're a seeker now. He leaves a gift with Howie on that last night they're having a party, and everybody wants to know who's the one that gets to go with you. The whole time he's been saying one person, I can take one person back. And they demand, who's going to go back with you? Sal does. Well, I'll tell you what, there's extra points for the person who goes to sleep the fastest and clears the room out.
Yep.
And here comes Ernie, and he has a, wait, I've done two tasks.
You never gave me my last task. What's my last task?
To stay here. And be prepared for anything.
I misspoke and said Ernie. I keep getting Ernie and Howie mixed up. That was Howie, of course. You didn't give me my last task. What is? What's my last task? To remain behind.
Mm-hmm.
And be prepared for anything. It's a gift. My gift to you is to stay here. You are cured. Stay here and be prepared. Be prepared for what? To do the works of God, right? Mm-hmm. To be earthly good.
Mm-hmm. Hey, there's that streak again.
But then he takes off and he's gone and he had one last gift to give. Because when they go down and see, he's not there. Here's this catatonic body of Robert Palmer, or Porter? Palmer? Porter? Palmer? Porter.
Porter.
Everybody knows. All the patients know that is not Prot. Who is that? How'd he get in here? I don't know, but it's not Prot. Right. That's for sure. Everybody's in agreement with that. Wait a second. We're all here. Where is Bess? Where is Bess? They run to Bess's room, to a perfectly made bed. And an empty room with her essay left on the bed.
Yeah.
And Howie, I got it right this time, Howie picks it up. Do you know what that essay said? I looked real hard to write this down. Here's part of it. The fire did not take me. It was dark and there was smoke and I woke up. The fire took my mother and sisters and my baby brother. I see them all the time. My mother says, girl, where are you? I want to tell her, but she can't hear me. Nobody can hear me. The fire truck came, but nobody could hear me. And on the next page, I have no home. Bess. And it looked like that was a drawing of a dove to me.
Mm-hmm.
I have no home. And Prot says, my gift to you is to give you a home and a voice. And I hear you. I had all kinds of passages. I'm way out of time. I want folks to read Luke chapter 7, verses 36 through 50. And then here's your key text for this verse, for this episode, for this movie. So as you are sitting on your
double-decker couch
with your friends and loved ones watching K-Pax, remember when the people came up to Jesus in John chapter 6, verses 28 and 29. This is out of the NASB, the New American Standard Bible. Therefore, they said to him, what shall we do so that we may work the works of God? Jesus answered and said to them, this is the work of God, that you believe in him who he sent. Believe in him whom he sent. Every person that he touched in this movie believed or will. Even I argue that Mark Powell believes. That's why he's searching. And he's going to come to a fuller knowledge of Prot. Brendan?
My question for you then.
Yes.
Even if all the people, Dr. Mark Powell himself, believe and thus act on that belief, and it should go without saying that believing and having faith in means acting in accordance to that faith. Even if they believe, and I agree, they do. Do they still fully understand
No.
What's going on?
No.
But Michael, don't you have to fully understand something in order to have faith in it?
If we do, we're all in trouble.
Aren't we? Aren't we? Because this is not Prout's story, per se.
Whose story is it?
Well, it's Mark's story.
And how is that?
Well, this story isn't about Prout's journey from K-Pax to Earth. It's about Mark's journey from doubt to faith.
Could that be the reason why every time we see Mark in an office, we see the prism lights shining on him from that
little award?
Yes.
That little crystalline
Are
award.
We to be reminded that it's shining on him now?
Hey, that's good. I didn't think about that. So, because of his doubt, and because of a lot of people's doubt, including the board of directors at the mental hospital, Mark wants to try to disprove some of Prout's own claims.
Yes.
Takes him to, what is this place called? An astro...
Well, some observatory.
A planetarium, something like that, where you go inside and there's a holographic display of the universe. It's actually pretty cool. It's one of my favorite, spectacularly speaking, one of my favorite scenes in the story. Because it is beautiful once Prout draws everything out.
Yeah.
And he draws everything out, and the scientist in
well, this
the room,
is common knowledge where I come from.
Yeah, this is just as easy as your kids knowing that the Earth revolves around the sun.
Yes.
Blows the scientist's mind, and then on the way out, as everything's descending from that moment, Mark and his friend Dave, his fellow astrophysicist friend Dave, they walk out onto this little walkway, and they have this little conversation.
What happened in there? I mean, he could be a savant. Now, there are savants who have painted flawless copies of Rembrandt who couldn't remember their own names. You don't believe him, Steve.
I don't know what I believe, Mark, but I know what I saw.
I don't know what I believe, but I know what I saw. It's funny how that sensual experience infects, or not infects, but affects what Dave now thinks, and how it's affected him, and how it's going to affect Mark Powell later on.
Yes.
And that's because Dave seems to be okay with not fully understanding something, but he knows what he saw.
Well, he's an astrophysicist. He's used to that.
Yeah, that's right.
What am I looking at here?
and let's just go on the Pawpaw Patch toward mystery for a second.
Mystery. I love a good mystery.
Mystery. Well, see, I
Who
do done too.
It?
I do too. But I didn't do it.
The dog that didn't bark.
No, it was General Custard in the conservatory with the lead pipe. No, not that kind of mystery. but to me, and we've kind of talked about this before. Does mystery as a storytelling device really have place in today's economy?
Oh.
In today's storytelling economy. Because I and you and some of our listeners, we like stuff like J.J. Abrams' Lost television series, and we like M. Night Shyamalan movies, and something those things have in common is that we don't get everything in the end. We don't know everything in the end, but yet we can still be affected by those stories. Whereas the mass population, if they don't get to know everything, then they're not going to support it. Because that means having
They
faith.
Feel gypped.
Yeah, they feel shortchanged.
Yes.
They feel like, oh, why couldn't you just tell us what really
well,
happened?
Well, in fact, they turn it around and say, you're not much of a storyteller.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. And something with K-Pax and all the other examples I just mentioned, when you're engaging the story, when you're reacting to the story, you have to be okay with not fully knowing what's going on.
This sounds like faith.
Doesn't it, though? I don't know what I believe, says Dave, but I know what I saw. We don't really know what happens in the world of this film, but we can only surmise based on how it affects Dr. Mark Powell. Because then we see his response to it. We see his response in in his showing, his expression, his working out of the faith that Prout has now given him. Because what does he say to Mark Powell? What does Prout say to Mark? He says, "And now that you've found it, Robert, take care of him,
please."
What does he say to Howie? Stay here, be prepared.
Feed my sheep.
It's like Jesus saying, "Feed my sheep," to Peter. You think Simon Peter knew everything that was going on?
No.
One of his leader, his rabbi, was just crucified 3 days ago, and then bada bing, he's back. Let's take it to John 21, verses 15 through 17, this time out of the NILT. After breakfast, Jesus asks Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" "Yes, Lord," Peter replied, "you know I love you." "Then feed my lambs," Jesus said. Jesus repeated the question, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" "Yes, Lord," Peter said, "you know I love you." "Then take care of my sheep." A third time he asked him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And Peter was hurt that Jesus asked the question a third time. He said, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." And Jesus said, "Then feed my sheep." You think as Jesus was giving those orders that Simon Peter really knew what was going on?
No, no.
Because he had just...
But he would grow into that knowledge.
He would grow into it through obeying.
Yeah.
He would grow into
trust
it.
Trust and obey.
Oh, there you go with those old-timey songs.
"For there's no other way."
Those old-timey songs.
To be happy in Jesus
is to trust and obey. And that's how Mark works out his faith. That's how Howie works out his faith. Even though they don't fully understand everything that Prout did, they can still obey him. And then from that obedience,
they didn't have the knowledge that Bess had.
Oh, no. Bess knew. Bess knew what was
there's
up.
No doubt. I know who you are.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the same goes for us. Even if we don't fully understand everything, and we're not going to, God tells Job that very clearly. Even though we don't fully understand everything that Jesus said or did, or that God does or says, we can still obey him.
Amen.
And we can
still
grow in that obedience.
Amen. Listeners, you can use K-Packs to teach the gospel to your friends and loved ones as you are sitting on your
double-decker couch
watching this awesome film. Just plant a seed. Plant a seed or water the seed that has been planted. 1 Corinthians chapter 3. And then allow God to cause the increase.
That's right. That's right.
What Christian themes did you find in K-Packs from 2001? Ron of the Red Oaks, we're talking to you since you requested this film. And we know that we will get some feedback from others of you on this one. Excellent film. Great tool for broaching the subject of eternity with your friends and loved ones. It's time for some feedback, and as we usually do, we are going taking a coconut horse ride. Coconut horse ride? I don't know who. Martha. To Martha. No. I'm sorry. Sorry. Patron Saint Philip is going to take us down to King Philip's Stables of Doom. He left a comment on episode number 126. That's where we talked about To Kill a Mockingbird with Gregory Peck. You can listen to that at ChristInCinema.com.
He says, "Hey guys, you picked a great classic here."
I agree, and so do the kids. No, they don't.
Where are they?
They're sleepy.
I haven't seen this in quite a few years, but listening to your episode got me misty-eyed at times. Hey, that's accolades right there. Two things that stick out to me are how Atticus models 1 Peter 3:15 and 16 so well. "But set Christ apart as Lord in your hearts and always be ready to give an answer to anyone who asks about the hope you possess. Yet do it with courtesy and respect, keeping a good conscience, so that those who slander your good conduct in Christ may be put to shame when they accuse you."
Amen. Perfect verse.
Hey, there you go.
That is Atticus Finch in a nutshell.
Yep. "He is such a good, patient, wise man that the people who are ugly to him are just shaming themselves, whether they realize it or not."
Yes.
I think specifically of Bob Yule hawking that loogie in his face.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
How idiotic did Yule look?
Yep.
Anyway, that was my interjection. Moving on. Also, the character of Scout is such a great one. She's an adorable little tomboy and reminds me of how throughout Scripture we see women in roles many may think are only for men. Whether leading Israel as judge or leading a house church with their spouse, women are an important part of our biblical history.
Amen!
And while the world is quick to judge on the basis of clothing or mundane behavior, we see great liberty in Christ, where a girl can play outdoors and get dirty, and participate in sports, lead people, or any number of things. God is concerned with our hearts and minds belonging to Him. Never mind the trifles that the world gets caught up in.
I think Prot taught us that very well in K-Pax.
Hey, I agree. Great job. Looking forward to showing this film to my youngest son. It's got much to teach us all. Love the show, guys. Hashtag MoeLad Gimlet.
Thank you very much, Patron Saint Philip, for your continued feedback and excellent thoughts. And and much like Mrs. What was the neighbor's lady's name?
DeBose.
DeBose. Just like Mrs. DeBose, Philip, your comments make us all look more beautiful. Any other feedback?
No, that's it.
No, where's Minerva?
Well-mannered frivolity.
What do we got?
Oh, well, last Monday, I got to sit in with filmmaker Stephen Kendrick.
What films does he make?
Oh, you know, stuff like War Room, Facing the Giants, Courageous, Fireproof, Flywheel, stuff like that.
Ah!
You know, stuff like that. He was at North Boulevard Church of Christ last Monday, and he had a nice little presentation on Christian filmmaking. And I got the full report up at my personal blog, link in the show notes.
Okay, sounds good. Hey, is it back?
Yes,
is it back? The lost update has been found. It once was lost.
Oh, stop it.
But now it's found.
Oh, stop it. So here's the rundown of what I got to this week.
Okay.
Ben killed John, but somehow John is still alive.
What?
He washes up on the shore. I don't know what to tell you. It's the best mango he's ever had. Jack, Kate, Hurley, and Saeed are now also back in the 1970s with Sawyer and Juliet and Jen and Miles. And Saeed tried to kill the young Ben, but Kate and Sawyer saved him by taking him to Richard Albert.
What is going on?
I don't know. I'm so lost.
Oh, that is a great point. You know what?
I don't understand.
No, I understood that one. You get a point.
Oh, hey. Oh, thank
Your
you.
Your first point?
I get a point?
For the episode. He's so lost.
Oh,
great
thank
pun.
You. And then, hey, I kind of teased a big announcement a couple weeks ago.
What was this big announcement?
Oh, I wanted to make sure that
it's smaller now.
It is. It's 27 pounds smaller.
Yeah!
That's what it is.
All right. All the kids say yes. Yeah. What is this 27 pound smaller announcement?
It's the Will Smith movie. No, it's I actually lost 27 pounds.
Wow.
Hey, and there's another full report on that and the personal blog, The Book of Brendan, link in the show notes.
And the show notes will be linked to at the bottom of the blog post for this very episode.
Yes, sir.
You know what? I'm going to... here we go. It's my wedding anniversary coming up this week. There's a high possibility that I will finally get to see Rogue One tomorrow. That's my well-mannered frivolity for... do you have a lightning round? The lightning round! 30 seconds.
Very briefly. A new podcast suggestion, Cultivated by Harper Media. Harbor Media, excuse me.
All right.
Conversations about faith and work. They just published episode 11 with Andy Crouch.
Is it Son of the Crouches?
No, that's a different.
Oh, okay.
No.
TBN?
Yeah, no.
Okay.
Anyway, just check it out. Very powerful.
Cultivated by Harbor Media.
Yeah.
That's the name of it?
No, the Cultivated Podcast, and it's produced by Harbor Media.
Oh, right. And my my tip this week is Shrek the Musical. The Broadway extravaganza is available on Netflix. If you like theater and musical and extravaganza and plenty of spectacle, you must watch Shrek the Musical. Again, streaming on Netflix. What's coming up on Finding Christ in Cinema, Brandon?
Well, next week we'll be hitting up Super 8.
All right.
And then after that, hey, look, this is Finding Christ in Tom Hanks Films.
Otherwise known as Finding Christ in Cinema.
Sure.
Yeah, sure.
And we're going to be looking at Sully.
Good.
Sully, and then while it's still on Netflix, we got to get The Jungle Book.
Yes, it just dawned on me the other day. We forgot.
Yeah.
And it's a great film. But it doesn't matter what we cover. What matters is that Finding Christ in Cinema is live in the studio each Saturday, Lord willing, at around 12 p.m. Central Time. You can you can join us for live video and especially chat using the chat room and video player at gctnetwork.com/live. Finding Christ in Cinema is part of the Great Commission Transmission Network, a listener supported ministry using new media and social networking to equip and encourage you to go into all the world and proclaim the good news to everyone. To find out more and to partner with us, visit us at gctnetwork.com/donate. To witness the firepower of this fully armed and operational digital ministry, including all 127 episodes of Finding Christ in Cinema, Brendan's Monday Movie Review, and links to all our social... No, it's not even... It doesn't even exist! And links to all of our social media profiles, visit our website at christincinema.com. Send all email to FCC@gctnetwork.com.
Call us up on the voice line at 507-407-GCTN.
Yes.
Or the backup line at 507-407-4286. Now, let's say you just want to listen to the good old podcast.
I do.
Whenever you want to listen to the good old podcast.
I do.
You can go to iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Google Play Music and search them all for Finding Christ in Cinema.
And for all the shows that we produce here at the Great Commission Transmission Network, including our brothers in Texas, the Theonauts! And our brand new Tolkien, all the time show, The Secret Fire Podcast. Yes, get over to our official website at gctnetwork.com. Mr. Brendan Taylor, anything else?
It was tied to an anvil.
Francisco, that's fun to say.
Potatoes.
Laugh it up, fuzzball.
And that is a wrap.
That's just as fascinating as the first 89 times you told me that.
Proof of a toucan.
I'm afraid you're just too darn loud.
It's a trap.
Never tell me the odds.
One does not simply walk into Mordor.
I do. I do. You are tuned in to the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission Transmission
at gctnetwork.com.
This is your Great Commission Transmission.